11. Kaidus knew now that the path he had chosen, the path of the Sith, was the right one. Despite the bewildering snarl of glitter and light flashing beyond his observation bubble, he could sense through the Force that the battle was all but won. As soon as Admiral Boitu brought the Hapen home fleet out of hiding, the traitor's doom would be sealed. The Corellians were carrying the brunt of the fighting, of course, throwing their battlecruisers and assault frigates against the Star Destroyers of the Fourth Fleet. But Jason could sense that the Bothans were having trouble, too. The ambushes and minefields they kept encountering were making it impossible for their light cruisers and corvettes to flank the Alliance defenders, and the Kaminoans and Huts weren't even factors. The few vessels they had been able to contribute after the Battle of Balmora were being relegated to rear defense, along with the flotillas from the Confederation's minor partners. So Kaidus did not understand what Boitu was waiting for, why he had not yet asked for the Hapen home fleet. Surely the Admiral could see that everything was going according to plan. All he need do was make this one request, and the Alliance would be saved. Kaidus only hoped that it had not been a mistake to trust the Bothan. He had been the one who insisted, on Gavin Darklighter's recommendation, that Boitu be given command of the battle, and he had sensed no deception when the Vice-Admiral assured him that his vow of Krevi demanded that he remain loyal to the Alliance. But with Bothans, one could never be sure. For all Kaidus knew, the Krevi might have been a cultural fiction that Bothans maintained to take advantage of situations like this. Kaidus turned to the little tactical display near the entrance to his observation bubble, then fixed his gaze on the transponder code of the Welmo Darb. Although the Star Destroyer was hardly the largest in the First Fleet, Boitu had selected it as his new flagship so that he would have the option of putting his heaviest firepower in the forefront without risking his command structure. Kaidus didn't sense anything amiss aboard the Darb, only a calm Bothan presence pondering options while the vessel's harried crew struggled to defend their ship. Kaidus touched a pad on the arm of his meditation chair, then asked, "Is the Darb reporting a sensor malfunction? Or data streaming problems?" A moment later, the voice of Lieutenant Krova, his personal communications officer, came over the speaker.
"They're reporting all systems optimal, Colonel. I could ask them to confirm."
"No," Kaidus said quickly. "I wouldn't want Boitu to think I'm impatient."
"The Vice Admiral is a perceptive being, Colonel Solo," Krova replied. "I'm sure he knows."
Kaidus was in too good a mood to be irritated by her sarcasm, at least until his comlink chimed with a special two-tone alert assigned to one of the few people for whom he always needed to make time. He flipped open the device and opened the channel. "Shouldn't you be in the ready room?"
"I'm in the refresher," Tahiri replied, "and we're not launching any time soon. Master Skywalker is on his way up to see you."
"What for?" Tahiri paused, then asked,
"When can we go back again?"
"That depends on how long you take to answer my question," Kaidus replied. Since their return to the Voxen cloning lab on Banu Ras, they had already flow-walked back to two more time locations to visit Anakin, and each time Kaidus had managed to end the trip, leaving Tahiri desperate for more.
"I'm very busy right now, as I'm sure you realize."
"This isn't healthy for me," Tahiri said, ignoring his warning. "You can't keep pulling us back before I'm ready."
"Then pick our destination more carefully," Kaidus said. "Something that isn't so emotionally charged for you."
"Fine," Tahiri said. "HNE just reported Omis's assassination, and Master Skywalker's as mad as a Yanskak on ice. You'd better be ready."
Kaidus's insides went cold with dread.
Apparently, the Holonet had decided to ignore the security hold he had placed on the story. And Ben's involvement alone would be enough to bring Luke to the bridge, ready to fight a Rancor. But he couldn't help fearing there was more to the visit, that his uncle had finally, somehow, discovered the identity of Mara's killer. Kytus closed the comlink without signing off, then refocused his Force awareness on the Anakin Solo's bridge. Luke's presence was already close, ascending a nearby turbolift, and the Force was rolling and crashing with his anger. Kytus touched the compad again.
"Inform bridge security that Master Skywalker is on his way to my day cabin."
"Master Skywalker?" Krova was silent for a moment while she checked the security monitors, then said, "Of course. What are their instructions?" Kytus thought for a moment, considering the possibility of trying to delay Luke while he prepared himself, then realized that would only look suspicious.
"Tell them to stay out of his way."
Kytus did not bother asking for a summary of recent events in the Jedi area of the Anakin Solo. Even had Luke not bothered to disable the monitoring equipment, the only thing the security officers would have seen was what the Jedi wanted them to.
"And see that we're not disturbed. I think we're going to need some privacy."
By the time Kytus had instructed SDXX to secure the cabin against eavesdropping, physical or otherwise, and hidden the droid safely inside its security closet, Luke was marching into the cabin. In his high boots and black Stealth X flight suit, he resembled a GAG trooper, at least until he hammered a slap pad to close the door and started across the floor. Kytus was glad to see Luke's lightsaber still hanging from its belt clip, but he took the precaution of slipping toward his desk, where he would have access to a dozen weapons and traps he had prepared in anticipation of just such a confrontation. Luke jabbed a finger in Kytus's direction.
"Now I understand why you've been avoiding me."
His tone was even and soft, but there was no mistaking the wrath in his Force aura.
"And this time, you've finally crossed the line."
"What are you talking about?"
Kytus asked, pretending ignorance. If the news of Omis's death was just breaking on the Holonet, an innocent Jason wouldn't logically have heard about it in the middle of his battle meditation.
"I'm sorry I haven't been able to console you, Uncle Luke, but I've been kind of busy trying to save the Alliance."
Luke narrowed his eyes and stopped in the center of the cabin.
"I'd sooner cry on a Hutt's shoulder than yours. I think you know that." "I suppose families should be honest with each other."
The sadness in Kytus's voice was genuine. He had always regretted losing his uncle's respect and love. Just another of the many sacrifices he was making to bring peace to the galaxy.
"But Admiral Boitu will be calling for the Hapen fleet soon. We can work this out, whatever it is, after the battle."
Luke shook his head. "I don't think so." Kytus exhaled in exasperation.
"Is this about the Academy?"
He sneaked a glance toward his observation bubble, where a halo of battle light could be seen flashing around his chair, broken only by the thick triangular pedestal on which it rested.
"I told you, I'm not going to leave one of the Alliance's most valuable assets unprotected."
"Don't play stupid," Luke snapped. "This isn't about the Academy. It's about Ben."
"Ben?"
Kytus stopped at the corner of his desk, feigning shock.
"Did something happen to him?"
"You tell me," Luke said. "You're the one who sent him."
"Sent him where? I've hardly spoken to Ben since the funeral."
In the next instant, Kytus found himself flying across the cabin toward his observation bubble. Luke had not gestured, had not flinched,
had not even shifted his gaze. He had simply grabbed Kytus in the force and hurled him 5 meters into his chair. "Don't lie." Luke started across the cabin. "I'm getting tired of it." Kytus sprang out of the chair, or attempted to. Instead, he found himself struggling against an invisible weight. He felt as if he were accelerating to light speed with a faulty inertial compensator.
"Luke, you've gone mad."
Kytus reached for the controls on the arm of his chair and discovered he couldn't even do that much.
"You can't do this. I know you're having trouble dealing with Mara's death, but
this has nothing to do with Mara," Luke said. "And you're lucky it doesn't. If she were here, if she had known what you were using Ben for, there'd be pieces of you scattered along the entire length of the Hydean Way." The irony of the statement was far from lost on Kytus, but he was too astonished and too frightened to take any pleasure in it. While it was true that Luke had taken him by surprise, it was equally true that he had done so with no visible effort, and that he was continuing to hold him with no apparent exertion. Keenly aware that all that stood between him and a quick death was Luke Skywalker's much-strained sense of decency, Kytus let a little of his very real fear seep into the Force, just enough to seem properly alarmed.
"Does this have something to do with Cal Omis?" he asked. "Tell me Ben didn't do anything foolish."
Luke's eyes grew narrow and cold.
"Tell me what makes you think he might have?"
"Of course," Kytus said. "Ben learned of a conversation that made it look as though Omis had something to do with Mara's death."
"That's ridiculous," Luke said. "Chief Omis would never have done something like that."
"Never have?"
Kytus echoed.
"You mean Ben... you mean Omis is dead?"
Luke looked at him without answering. Kytus would have shaken his head, save that it was still being held motionless with the Force. Had it been Mara's death instead of Omis's that Luke had just heard about, Kytus knew he would already be dead. Another reminder that anyone could be surprised.
"I tried to tell Ben the same thing, but he's so full of anger."
He locked gazes with Luke.
"I'm afraid he's going to become its servant if one of us doesn't reach him soon."
Luke nodded, then sat on the corner of Kytus's desk. "How did Ben find out about this conversation?" Kytus forced himself not to look away.
"I wish I knew."
"You told him."
When Luke's expression did not change, Kytus realized that his uncle had been expecting the lie, that he had already worked matters out for himself.
"It's just so convenient for you, isn't it? You let something slip in an innocent conversation and point Ben like a missile."
"That's not what happened."
The denial was strictly for form. Kytus knew Luke wouldn't believe it.
"But even if it were, now is hardly the time to discuss it. We're a squib's hair from victory. After we crush the Confederation, I'll be..."
Krova's voice came over the comm speaker.
"I'm sorry to interrupt, Colonel Solo, but Admiral Boitu is ready for the Hapens."
Kytus felt a knot unwind inside.
"Finally. Tell Admiral Boitu the Hapens will be coming shortly."
Kytus had retained personal control of the Hapen home fleet, determined to prevent any risk to Tenel Ka or Alana by not using it until victory was certain. He waited until Krova had acknowledged the order and closed the channel, then turned to his uncle.
"I've told you all I know about Omis's death, and I need to transmit that order myself. The Queen Mother insisted I take personal responsibility for committing her fleet."
Luke raised his brow.
"You think you're dismissing me?"
I know I am.
Titus put an angry edge in his voice. He might be trapped in a humiliating position right now, but he was still the leader of the Galactic Alliance, and Luke was still its servant.
If you like, we'll open an inquiry into Omus's death after we've saved the Alliance.
Luke glared at Titus for a long moment, then finally slipped off the desk. Is that a promise?
It is.
Then I'll take it for what it's worth, Luke said. Leaving Titus force-pinned in his chair, he started toward the door. I'll show myself out. Titus knew he would be freed as soon as Luke turned his concentration to something other than force-pinning him. But that might take minutes, and Titus needed to send in the home fleet now. Besides, he was the chief of state of the Galactic Alliance, and he could not allow anyone, even Luke Skywalker, to humiliate him and simply leave. He had to assert some sort of authority.
Luke, Titus called, aren't you forgetting something?
Luke stopped at the door and looked back, the rage in his face now softening to what looked like remorse. You're right. I should warn you that you'll have to crush the Confederation without stealth X's. The Jedi can support you no longer.
What?
Titus was so shocked that he tried to rise, and found himself as unable to move as before.
You can't desert now. We can end this war.
We could destroy the Confederation fleets and kill a lot of rebels, Luke admitted. But I don't think you can end this war, Jason. I don't think you even know what it's about.
That's absurd.
Titus did not understand how a man who had been fighting wars for 40 years could be so foolish.
After their fleets are destroyed, Corellia and Bathawi will have to accept our terms. And once they've surrendered, the rest of the Confederation will have no choice but to come racing to rejoin the Alliance.
Luke shook his head and reached for the touchpad beside the door. There's always a choice, Jason.
And if you go through with this one, you'll regret it.
Titus could not understand why Luke wanted to desert him just when they were on the brink of saving the Alliance, but he did not know how to prevent it.
Have you forgotten the Academy?
The door opened. Instead of stepping through, Luke faced Titus and spoke in a very calm voice. I'm sure you're not threatening the younglings. He pointed at the base of Jason's meditation chair and made a tapping motion with his finger. The pedestal gave a loud whoomph, and the seat dropped a quarter meter. Because you really don't want to see me angry. Luke made the tapping motion again. The pedestal emitted a metallic shriek, and the seat dropped another quarter meter. And I think you're smart enough to know that. Luke tapped a last time, and the pedestal collapsed with a low, loud crump, depositing Titus on the floor with his feet sticking out in front of him like a child. But if you want to try me, go ahead and make that threat. Luke lowered his hand, and the weight vanished from Titus's chest. He could have leapt up to attack, had he been that foolish, but Sith were not slaves to their emotions. Avenging his humiliation could wait until after he had saved the Alliance. So, remaining on the floor where Luke had deposited him, Titus simply touched the compad on his armrest.
Lieutenant, do we have an open channel to Princess Solder yet?
Actually, replied a deep Hapen voice, you're speaking to him now, Colonel Solo.
My apologies.
Titus looked across the day cabin to lock gazes with Luke.
Are you ready to commence your attack?
I am, Isolde said. Luke lowered his gaze and shook his head.
Then please proceed,
Kaidas said,
and may the Force be with you.
May it be with all of us, Isolde replied. If this plan doesn't work, we're going to need it.
The channel closed with a pop. Moving very slowly, so his uncle would not misinterpret his actions as an attack, Kaidas stood.
I know you too well,
he said to Luke.
You're not going to abandon the Alliance.
There is no Alliance. Luke turned to leave. It died with Cal Omis.
For you, maybe.
Kaidas couldn't understand why his uncle was so focused on Omis's death. It was one among millions. And even if Kaidas had put the idea in Ben's head, he hadn't actually ordered the assassination.
But you are going to support this attack. I'm quite certain the Senate would frown on turning the security of the Jedi Academy over to an order of deserters.
Luke's hand brushed the hilt of his lightsaber, and Kaidas thought for a moment that the fight he had been anticipating since Mara's death, anticipating, dreading, and wanting, was finally going to come. He stepped away from the observation bubble, giving himself some maneuvering room in case Luke came at him in a tumbling pass. But Luke seemed to realize that attacking Kaidas aboard his own Star Destroyer, even if he was fortunate enough to kill him, would only put the Academy and the rest of his Jedi in an even more precarious position. He moved his hand away from his lightsaber and put it out to stop the door behind him from sliding shut. Okay, Jason, he said. If that's how you want to play this, we will.
It's not how I want anything, Kaidas said. But if that's what it takes to win this war, I'll do it.
Luke studied Kaidas for a moment, then seemed to surrender to circumstances. I don't know why that surprises me, but it does. His voice was weary and sad. It looks like I should be getting back to my Stealth X.
It looks like you should,
Kaidas agreed.
And may the Force be with you out there.
Luke snorted, half in disgust and half in humor. Thanks, I guess. He stepped through the door and started across the anteroom, his disappointment hanging in the Force as heavy as fog on Dagobah. Goodbye, Jason. It did not escape Kaidas that Luke had departed without returning the traditional kind wishes, but that was probably too much to ask of someone who had just been brought to task. Kaidas waited until his uncle had passed out of sight, then closed the door and turned to find SDXX standing at his back.
That went well, the droid said. For a time, it appeared you would have to kill him, too.
Jason frowned.
Two?
He hadn't told the droid about Mara. Hadn't told anyone.
What do you mean by that?
In addition to his wife, of course,
SDXX explained.
You've been letting secrets slip in your sleep.
Kaidas thought of Tenel Ka and went empty inside. The only time he slept well anymore was in her company.
What do I say?
He asked.
Is it clear?
SDXX leaned forward, pushing his skeletal face close to Kaidas's.
So you did kill her.
Droids weren't supposed to have smug in their repertoire of voice inflections, but SDXX managed to sound fairly close.
I wasn't sure.
What do I say? Jason shouted.
SDXX remained faceplate to nose with Jason.
You never actually admit anything, he said. It's just a lot of talk about necessary sacrifices and making the galaxy safe for children like your daughter.
My daughter.
Kytus's heart sank. He was putting Alana at risk in his sleep.
Do I ever call her by name?
SDXX cocked his head sideways, no doubt focusing his photomicrometer on Jason's pupil so he could gauge the degree of shock his answer caused.
You call her by a lot of names,
SDXX said.
Jaina, Danny, Annie, Alaya.
Enough,
Kytus ordered. He would have liked to send the droid back to Tendrondo to have an owner exception entered into its probe programming, but that wasn't really an option. Lando had made clear where his loyalties lay, by abetting Han and Leia Solo in their efforts to avoid capture.
Return to your monitoring duties. Let me know if crew members start gossiping about trouble between Luke and me.
SDXX reluctantly pulled his face away from Kytus's.
Alana?
I'm about to have you converted to torpedo parts, Kytus warned.
You don't have to threaten.
SDXX started toward his security closet.
I'm not the one mumbling secrets during shutdowns.
Kytus started back across his day cabin, worrying about how preoccupied Tenel Ka had seemed the morning of Mara's funeral, wondering whether she had been hearing things in his sleep that made her suspect him of the killing. At the time, he had attributed her withdrawal to common sorrow, but now he couldn't help wondering. Was she even at this moment pondering whether to reveal what she had heard to Luke and the Council Masters? Probably not, Kytus decided. Had Tenel Ka heard anything incriminating, she would never have seemed preoccupied or aloof. She would have taken great care to make sure that she appeared perfectly normal. And the first he would have known about her suspicions was when she stuck a lightsaber against his back and started to interrogate him. At least, that was what he hoped. By the time he reached the observation bubble, the battle had erupted into a curtain of light and flame that was stretched all the way across space. The Anakin Solo was pouring fire into the conflagration from all four of its long-range turbolaser batteries, causing the decks to shudder and the illumination to dim and flicker. Every couple of seconds, a tiny dash would emerge from the firestorm and swell into a crimson streak of energy in the blink of an eye, then blossom into a boiling wall of death against the ship's shields. Any attempt to make visual sense of the firestorm was hopeless, but the sight of so much unleashed energy filled Kytus with awe and pride. He had arranged this, marshaled the death-dealing power, and lured the enemy into its path. And it made him feel like a, well, not quite like a deity, but like a man standing at the brink of destiny. This victory would place the galaxy in his grasp, and once he had the galaxy, peace would be within his reach. Krova's voice came over the comm.
The Jedi are ready to launch, Colonel.
All of them?
Kytus asked.
Master Skywalker, too?
There was a brief silence while Krova consulted the hangar chief. Then she said,
Master Skywalker is the one making the report.
That was quick,
Kytus said, raising his brow.
Are the Hapens in position?
Opening fire now, Krover reported. But Admiral Boatu's plan doesn't call for the stealth X's to attack until the Bothans turn to meet the Hapens. He feels the added element of confusion will—
I'm aware of the battle plan, Lieutenant.
Kytus focused his Force awareness deep inside the Anakin Solo's belly, where he felt a snarl of angry Jedi presences.
deciding it would be better to have them dodging missiles and turbolaser volleys than sitting idle and stewing about his authority, he said,
"And Master Skywalker is aware of the plan as well. Let him launch."
Krova acknowledged the order, and a moment later, Kytus felt the Jedi moving away from the Anakin Solo. Realizing it would soon be time for him to coordinate their attack with Admiral Boitu, Kytus grabbed his meditation chair in the Force and discovered that he could not turn it back toward the battle. No matter how hard he exerted himself, it would not budge. Krover reported that the Hapens had sealed the Confederation's escape route and were now fully engaged. Kytus gave up on the chair. He couldn't see anything useful through the bubble anyway, and dropped into the seat facing away from the battle. Instead of leaving his legs stretched out in front of him as they had been before, he drew his knees up to his chest and felt no less foolish. Krover reported that the Bothans were turning to engage the Hapen home fleet. The First and Seventh fleets began to press the flanks, trying to squeeze them into a crossfire, and the Confederation fought desperately to hold position, dealing as much death as they suffered. Kytus closed his eyes and did his best to grasp the battle in all its complexity, nudging a task force commander forward here, warning off a Star Destroyer captain there, always keeping track of the Jedi stealth X's creeping along the edges of the fight toward the Bothan fleet. Finally, Krova patched Boitu's gravelly voice through directly to Kytus.
"Congratulations, Colonel. The time has come to end this war. Send in the stealth X's, please."
"My pleasure,"
Kytus replied.
"And, Admiral?"
"Yes?"
"Thank you for your loyalty."
"That's nothing to thank me for, sir,"
Boitu replied.
"A crevy can't be broken, no matter who takes command."
"All the same, I'm glad to have you on our side."
As Kytus spoke, he reached out to the Jedi, urging them to attack. They responded with a wave of anger even greater than what he had sensed in the hangar, and their presences began to grow noticeably weaker as their stealth X's accelerated away at full power. To Kytus's alarm, the Jedi presences continued to grow weaker, entirely bypassing the Bothans and shooting out through the Hapen home fleet toward the fringes of the Kuat system. Finally, they vanished altogether. A moment later, Boitu's voice came over the comm.
"Where are those stealth X's, Colonel? If the Bothan Corps doesn't start collapsing soon, this is going to turn into the longest, bloodiest battle since the Yuuzhan Vong took Coruscant."
Kytus was too shocked, too angry to answer immediately. The Jedi had deserted him. Worse, they had betrayed him, deliberately misled him, without regard for what it would do to the Alliance.
"Colonel?"
Boitu demanded.
"I can't press the attack until the Jedi strike."
"What happens if you do?"
Kytus asked.
"Press the attack without the Jedi, I mean."
Boitu was silent for only a moment.
"We lost our stealth X's."
"My questions first, Admiral,"
Kytus said sharply.
"Can we do this without them?"
This time, it didn't even take a moment for Boitu to answer.
"It's possible,"
he said,
"but I wouldn't want to try it. We've lost our big advantage, and if we lose here, we lose everything."
"I see."
If Kytus ordered Boitu to press the attack anyway, he would be gambling with the lives of Tenel Ka and Alana. And growing up in the Solo household, he had learned enough about high-stakes gambling
to know that only a fool risks everything without a big edge.
Then I'm afraid we can no longer press the attack, Admiral.
Kytus went cold inside.
The Jedi have betrayed us.